Welcome to Podcast 24, Island CT Podcast.
A podcast about science, nature, technology, and education, and failure again. I see that every time.
How about gene drive?
Gene drives would be a really good one, yeah.
So, okay.
A podcast about science, nature, technology, and education, and gene drives.
Hi, I'm Kelly.
And I'm Patrick, and together we are the hosts of the Island CT Podcast.
Okay. So, this week, I started by reading up on how closely related a chicken is to a dinosaur.
Wait, you moved right into...
I did. I'm sorry. Was there other things?
Well... You have administrative stuff you just...
I'm sorry. We are recording tonight. Can we start over? I really messed up.
No. No, you are not allowed to start over.
No. Quack. It just must go on. Okay. We're recording December 3rd.
Too bad we don't have video. We could do a Larry Moe and Curly type thing right now. Stab you in the eyes!
I really want to restart. Can I restart? Ah. Okay.
We're good. We're running. Okay, we have I did the three ticks that no one ever hears. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Oh, we didn't record silence. Mm-mm. That's okay. I'm sure we have some. Well, there was nothing you had under administrative stuff. Oh, I see what you wanted to do the date. Yeah. It's the 3rd? December 3rd, Thursday?
I did say December 3rd.
Oh, did
Thursday.
You? Okay. Mm-hmm. There's actually not much administrative stuff.
No. Nope.
There's a ton more on the website.
Yes.
Because I really worked at it. Mm-hmm.
We're putting up our older blog entries.
Yep. And podcasts. It's a little bit different. I said I was going to start from the end and move backwards in time. Mm-hmm. But pretty fast I hit the ones from when the server was down.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones early on are just really well made and ready to go and stuff. I mean, they were up on the site for mm-hmm. a long time. So I started moving and putting those on.
Mm-hmm.
And then this week I really haven't done much of anything because we'll talk about the great successes we had
mm-hmm.
for building stuff. But but I think that's all we have.
Okay.
For administrative stuff. It's going to be out on Sunday with almost certainly at least one, possibly two other of our older podcasts.
Right.
So.
Okay.
So, blog entries, or were you going to go on to something?
No, I was waiting for you to choose.
Well, my blog entry was the homemade bias, and I think we talked about that already.
Really?
Did we? No? I didn't think we did. Okay, maybe we'll do that.
Okay.
I think I'd mentioned at least I was going to, but this is all part of our building the 80-meter transmitter and other stuff. This is something a system I came up with a little while ago already, for making homemade vias. And the big problem is that it's really hard to get copper wire to fit through holes and then stick there when you want them to,
mm-hmm.
get them exactly the right size. And there's variability every time you drill, so the holes end up slightly different sizes. And the way I finally made it work is to take a piece of wire that almost fits, bang one end flat so it's wider in one direction, and then pull it through with pliers and jam it in there,
mm-hmm.
and then solder it through. So that was my entry, and I have some pictures and stuff, and you know, it's really nothing special, but until you've struggled with making them, man, it's just, it's one of those things that seems like it should be so easy.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you try to do it, well, maybe you have successes, but maybe it just turns into this ordeal that
doesn't quite
work. And you, anyway, so I thought it would be worth putting out there.
Oh, yeah.
And since then, I've found other entries on other blogs and forum posts where people have had other systems, some of them a lot better than the one I have.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them more involved, some of them seemingly simpler, although I don't know some of them if I believe that they actually work. Anyway, so mine's not, you know, it's not a really earth-shattering thing. It's just a little trick.
And I think that's handy to have. I know that I look things up online a lot when I'm working with the kids.
Yeah, well, I do too for this type of stuff. Mm-hmm. If I had seen this ahead of time, or if I had seen that first, right, before I started working on it, that would have really saved me a lot of time.
Right, right.
So, if I had decided to go that way, but not guaranteed. And your blog entry?
Okay, my blog entry, like I mentioned before, my goal was to really figure out if dinosaurs were closely related to chickens. It was this crazy comment that I kept on hearing from my students. It's like, wow, do you know that chickens and dinosaurs are really closely related?
Chickens
the most closely related?
Yeah, I loved your blog entry simply because of that, hearing stuff from your kids.
So it was one of those things that, you know, and then of course there'd be sort of an argument about it between two students, and I'd look at them and I'd be like, I have no idea. You know, I have to check that out.
I mentioned that, didn't you remember? We read that book way back, like years ago, about, it had more to do with whether the dinosaurs were homeotherms or not.
Right.
But back then already, I mean, this has been something that's been around for a long time. This possibility doesn't seem like it's a new thing anymore.
Right. Right. And there's a few cool things that I found, like the eggs of the dinosaur eggs.
Uh-huh.
It was really neat, though. They looked at the dinosaur eggs and they looked at the pores and they compared them to crocodile and turtle eggs and bird eggs. And they found that the crocodile and turtle eggs have more pores because they need to have more opportunities for the exchanges of gases than you would compared to a bird's nest where it's a surface nest where there's more exchange of gases occurring. So I just thought that was really cool that, you know, the actual egg can give you some information about where that nest is placed, either on the surface or buried underneath decaying organic matter. So I just thought it was a neat thing. And then, you know,
it also makes you think about the egg, the shell structure itself, and how diffusion comes through it and stuff, and the fact that there needs to be pores. You know, it's not just through the shell.
Right.
And there's a division of part of the shell is there for structural purposes and strength, and one is there for diffusion purposes, and they're independent. And so I would have loved to see the micrographs of the pores.
Yeah, I would too. So now, you know, of course I want to look more at eggs and just see what are the pores and what are they seeing. And what they found is that the theropods are really closely related to birds in general.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason the kids were bringing up the chicken is because of this recent article that came out in 2015 from Bahart and Anja Buller at Yale University. And what they did is they were trying to look for what is the mechanism that is triggering the development of the modern beak. So they were looking at beak development evolutionarily, and they looked at more of the gene drives for that. And when they actually altered the genes that are responsible for formation of that beak in a chicken egg or chicken with a
chickens
with chickens, they formed a more of a snout that you would see on the dinosaurs. So I thought that was really neat that over time you have this adaption.
You know, we had Jurassic Park.
I know. And
we don't need, now we realize we don't need that.
No.
We
can make
what
our
if they
own.
Knocked out what if they knocked out what if they knocked out the genes required for making feathers?
Yeah.
You got a chick without a beak and just skin. You basically have a velociraptor.
I know.
Need to grow a few teeth.
So
you got it.
He did mention that they only did this as a way of looking at the mechanism that forms the beak. They did not have the intention of creating chicken dinosaur.
How'd they knock out the?
See, I didn't look at the article. That would have taken a little more time, but I think it is CRISPR.
We don't even need to push it.
No, we don't.
Do you know, actually, you think we just have one. We have two articles, because when you said, I have one more I want to look over, so I picked a new one up. CRISPR again.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it wasn't even in the title. I was just...
Yeah, we have this overall ongoing CRISPR theme. So...
This is the year of CRISPR, or maybe it's still coming.
Yeah, I think it's still coming. So, okay, you're next.
Okay, so this was, by the way, blog entries 47 and 48.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly's was 48. Let's see. Well, I'm going by your sheet here. Mm-hmm. Okay, so minor topics for me is what you have.
Yep.
Okay. Boy, I wish I'd read more, but I was just...
You had a great week.
Yeah. When something happened, and then I went into overdrive. But I will talk about that later, because that's not a minor topic. Oh, we are going to try to finish it a bit earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So we're 13 minutes into it now, or about. So, a new Linux voice came out. Haven't looked at it tons, but I take my time a bit more since I have it for a month before the next one comes out. I really like the editorials written by Simon Phipps in there. And this one's nothing special, but it's kind of neat. He comments on the fact that there's like all of just tons of new open source foundations. Showing up, and he puts it in quotes, open source foundations, because he says really there's two different kinds. There's traditional ones, which are like public benefit organizations. Those are his words.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have a mission that's really for helping the public.
Right.
And that's written into their charters, I guess, and other places. And then there's this other kind, and most of the new ones are this other kind, and he says they're really not, they're foundations by name, but they're really not the same thing that we used to have. And he considered them basically trade associations.
Oh, wow.
And the intrinsic thing that's different about them is that they're not there for the public. They're there to help the members of the association, which are industry.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bit, and some of them, you know, he says they can be good, but generally there's also a lot that they can do that can be bad, and so you got to be careful. Just because it's an open source foundation, you know, it can be ways to lock down formats and stop new upcoming development from breaking into the market that's already controlled by some people. So it was kind of interesting. That's from, oh, I should give which one it's from. That's from Linux Voice 22, which is actually, they are so far ahead. This is really weird. This is the, so I received this in November, and it's their January 2016 issue already.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I don't know how it got that way. Mm-hmm. A super short one, and I think I'll stick to mine, because last time we tend to go by types of topics.
Right.
So I'll keep to all of those from that one. I found this really neat Firefox, and this is not me, it's from the Linux Voice again. It was a collection of things for how to use it smarter, but this has nothing to do with Linux. It's a Firefox extension called It's All Text. And so, you know, when you have like a little box in on a website and you get to type something in?
Right.
If it's one line, that's not going to help. I tried it out. And it's just one of those, you go to Firefox and you go to add-ons and you search for it and you find it. It's all text and you just, so there's nothing special Linux-y about it. But if you have a bigger box, so for example, on the Backwoods Orienteering site, when we sign up for an event, one of the advanced events, then you put in your name, which event is a drop-down list, phone number, and then there's a box underneath that's bigger, so you can have several lines. It's for that that it makes a difference. You get a little button that shows up marked Edit, if you have the It's All Text there, and you click on that, and whatever editor you've told it to use, it pops up, and you can type in it. So you could type in, I guess, Word, I don't know. I set it up to use Vim, and I type in what I want, save, close, and it suddenly puts all that you wrote in there.
Oh, neat.
So, yeah, it's, well, it was kind of fun.
Cool.
I have to say, the way they describe it is like, oh, you just load it up and run it, and I went to try to do that, and it didn't work. And I had to do a fair bit of fiddling. Took me like half hour or an hour or two. Maybe not an hour, I can't remember, to get it to work. looking around, that is all I have for Linux-y stuff. So maybe this would be a time to go back and forth to go to your main topics.
Okay, so I looked at climate, and there was two articles in Science that caught my attention. There's the talks that occurred recently in Paris, where the countries made these intended national determined contributions, the INDCs. And the countries got together, and for the first time, they kind of wrote down what they're going to do. And the goal is that...
So, I have to say, I saw that, and then I decided to ignore it. And then I saw you put it on the thing, and I had time to look it up now, and I just didn't. And so I really know nothing about it. But
well,
it's just something that I've been like, wow, you know, it's easy to say stuff, so.
And, you know, and in this brief overview that they had on the Paris talks, they really just stated, wow, for the first time they've made these INDCs, and it is hoped that they're going to be revisited every 5 years. This is the first time that they've had pledges that they've made that they've gone back to. They wanted them binding by law, but
so
that didn't happen.
INDCs are basically what the countries are saying, we guarantee we're going to cut emissions.
Right.
So in terms of global climate change or...
And it's carbon emissions.
Protection in general... It's carbon specifically?
Yes.
Okay.
There's a carbon focus. Yeah.
I mean, it's not like stuff hasn't happened before, like with CFCs, right?
Right.
But it's, I don't know.
I know. I
just don't see that.
I share your skepticism.
Yeah.
But I had to read the article because felt like I was always just saying, and yet again they're getting together and what's going to come of it.
So you want
to
read.
So I wanted to read just to say, okay, I kind of have a feel for what they've done. It is a little different. Let's see if they come back and revisit it in 5 years and people are keeping up to their commitment.
Yep.
There is a thing that I thought a neat part of that is that, my thing went kind of crazy, is that, you know, when you're, for developing countries to make a pledge, it's a commitment, but for developing countries, it's even more when you don't have the infrastructure in that. And so that's why...
And the population is going faster.
And the population, you have this huge population.
And the populations are getting wealthier.
Right.
In those very countries.
Yes. Yeah.
Except probably African countries in the equatorial region seem to be really slow, and they also are the ones with the highest population growth, right? Like Nigeria and stuff. That's really sad. But India and China, you know, this wealth is really coming up. So,
and so that's what led me to the next article, because I thought, you know, for those countries, the countries that are really starting to develop and they have these huge populations and infrastructure concerns, it would be a challenge. And one of the articles is by Priyanka Pulla, and it's Can India Keep Its Promise? And this is from
this
Science.
This is not written by a – this is just like a staff writer or something.
Yeah, it's in the news, and it's a climate. It's one of the climate features.
Okay.
And so they go over the population, 1.2 billion.
I know.
Like, that's just a shocker.
When there was this story about how many farmers there were.
Oh, yeah.
And it was,
and
like,
then it was like 200,000. Yeah.
No, it was like
You're
million,
right. Yeah, you're right. You're
and it
right.
was like, wow.
I know. I couldn't even put my head around that. So it was interesting to see that that the carbon emissions that for India, they're going to do between 20 and 25%. For developed countries, they're expecting between 30 and 35.
Yeah.
And that's what they're hoping or committing
but
to right now.
But they're saying cuts.
Yeah.
See, so, I don't even understand how you could even say that.
Right.
In my mind, it's like carbon emissions are going to go through the roof because they always have been. We've never gone down.
Right.
And I can't imagine, I mean, not that I know. And with growing population that's also getting wealthier, I just cannot imagine how, other than a drastic increase in the price of oil, I cannot imagine something that will actually decrease the emissions.
So here's the craziness. So I was thinking of all these things. India has a huge coal supply, which, you know, is available to them. What did I have? I had this housing. So I don't have the quote here right now. But when you're talking about, you know, development and things like that, there's this quote that says something like 80% of the houses that will be built by the year 2030 have not been built yet in India.
Wow.
Yeah, and you're talking about a population of 1.2 billion, right?
It kind of reminds me of that story. it's that professor at I think he's in at the university in Boulder, in Colorado, And he's like, you know, to bacteria growing in a petri dish, doubling their population every 20 minutes, and there's so much nutrients in there, the population before the last doubling, it looks to them
like everything's
there's an
good.
Unlimited supply.
Mm-hmm.
And the very next doubling,
it crashes.
They all die.
Yeah.
It feels like, on the one hand, there's so much good happening, population growth rates declining in some places, that, you know, especially in the West, leveling off and stuff, and a lot more smarter choices happening. On the other hand, you hear about these increases like this, and you're like, wow, how far are we from that? Yeah, we've got no problems. There's so many resources to, like, hitting this sudden wall.
Right. And one of the things that I thought another point that was good with the article is that, you know, when you think about India trying to reduce the carbon emissions, well, that would mean that they would have to have like a 40% increase in their electrical power capacity. And that would mean that they'd have to start getting it from other sources like hydro and nuclear power, right? But we also have an infrastructure stretch where, you know, with solar power and wind power,
mm-hmm.
it's possible to use it. But then you have these fluctuations within a system, a grid, and their grid is so much older and it's not able to make the leap.
Right.
You know, we're barely able to keep up to. And they show this picture of the power line that it just looks like something that I've wired together with students.
If someone did not know the phrase rat's nest.
Yes. So
they could probably come up with it looking at this. I mean, we're looking at this picture out of Science.
Yeah.
From that article. And it's like a telephone pole with wires mm-hmm. going in all different directions. And it just looks like a ball of yarn with yarn being pulled out in
right.
every direction.
So it's around New Delhi. And there's seriously, there must be 100 wires going off.
How could you even tell which wire
well,
is doing
and you
what?
See this poor man working on it. And honestly, there's like ribbons and hunks of wire hanging off of other working wire
yeah.
that I think there'd be a serious safety factor of just walking up to that rat's nest.
Except for the fact that it's probably so overloaded. Actually, that's an interesting. No, seriously, though,
yeah.
do we... I don't even know what their standard is for the voltage. We're so used to just saying, oh, there's only two.
Right.
There's 110 and 220.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, most of the world, who knows? I don't know what they're on.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't think it was mentioned in the article. But they did say that, you know, with the system they have now, they get constant outages. And that,
yeah.
And because, you know, it is an older system, it is an overburdened system.
Yeah.
As you can see from this
Although
one.
Although the outages probably have more to do with the stations and how much is being drawn than the quality of the wires.
Right. Right. So, very interesting about, you know, looking at the issues that face them. And of course, there's this huge push to maintain the forests, so stop the cutting of forest land in India. That's the other part of it.
Yeah,
maintain what they have. But then when they started looking at forest and their forest conservation methods,
uh-huh.
they realized that, you know, they have not been accurate in their... in the way that they've recorded the amount of forest land, and they've included mangoes, oranges, and
like plantations.
Yeah, plantation as trees as forest. Well, as well as if they were forest, and they've just
estimated
how much they have. Yeah. And they use the example of there's this one area where they had reserved for the tiger and protection of the tiger, and the population of the tiger had actually crashed. There were no tigers left, and their agency or their rangers were over-reporting tiger populations, like if they still were maintaining them. So,
like, was this... like they were faking it, or
they were faking it.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah, so it's it's sad, you know. And so you have to kind of think, okay, so what do they really have? What are they working with now? And then think about, okay, what's the possibilities?
Yeah.
So yeah, I was right. With 80% of the buildings had not been built. By 2:30. I just wanted to make sure that I didn't overestimate that, because it seems like such a huge number. So as I looked at it, the things that came out in the article were not surprising. I just, you know, as we start to move and try to reduce the amount of carbon given off, we also have to think, okay, so in developing countries, when new companies are moving in and transplanting themselves from Europe, from, you know, United States, and going for markets where they can produce things cheaper and faster or, cheaper. Yeah. What are those companies bringing with them? And I think it's a country's responsibility for enforcement, but I also think it's an international responsibility, and therefore, you know, we have multinational companies. I also think that they have to start to take responsibility for energy use.
Yeah, that's really tricky.
It is. It's tricky, but
they're in competition with each other.
They are. And at the same time, I don't think if they're moving in and they're taking advantage of cheaper, dirtier coal, and yet they're employing many people there. It's just that tricky situation. Taking responsibility?
Yeah. See, my point of view is that the people that live in the country, they have an incentive both ways, right?
Yeah.
As an individual, they have incentive to take the money from those big companies, but they're destroying their country.
Mm-hmm.
They also have an incentive to make their country a better place and stuff. The multinationals don't have any incentive to do good, right? Because you can do good and then be outcompeted by someone else.
Yeah.
And of course you can do good and get good PR out of it, but it sure helps to make that decision if the rules are being enforced and that the rules are there set up by the country saying,
right,
no, you know, you have to do this and this for our people. You have to give them good wages, provide them with health care, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And then companies that are still willing to go in there and do good business, well, you know, they get markets both ways and PR and... just asking one side, especially the companies, to do stuff on their own is awfully tricky.
It is.
But making rules,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, developing countries, it's...
I know. I think it has to be more of a global emphasis where, or maybe...
Right, because you're saying, like, is... for
one country...
If, like, one country... countries, in a sense, are in competition.
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just... And you know, I know it's not a solution that we're going to see in the near future, but hopefully we'll start seeing people taking more responsibility. No. Yeah.
Not my area of expertise. full of opinions.
Mine too.
But they're not really worth much. So that was, is that all of the
climate ones?
The climate stuff? Yep. Okay. So, let me see, back to mine.
Mm-hmm.
Should we keep going with science and then go on to like our successes?
Yeah, that's what I think. We should do. Well, we should do this one and then
the
we'll
big one?
Switch over to yours. Yep.
Okay. Let me get a small thing out of the way because it'll finish it up. I've been really psyched for the ITER project for fusion.
Oh, yeah. I wanted you to talk about
that. So it's
been
delayed
Sorry.
Again. And I'm not going to say much, but it looks like they have a new, or had last year, a new, I don't know what they call them, director general take over, Bernard Bigo. And boy, they've had like just problems after problems. And it's being delayed another 6 years. So, what does it look like? First plasma. It should produce 500 megawatts. First plasma, they're saying now, is 2025. So, 10 years from now. Anyway. I also want to say more. There wasn't lots about the technical type stuff in there, but
I really wanted Isaac and Luke to work there as computer programmers.
Yeah. I think their first plasma was meant to be next year.
I think so.
2016. Mm-hmm. Now it's 2025.
Yep.
So
maybe our grandchildren.
I just want to see
there.
That. I just want to see that succeed so badly.
I do too. I really just.
Even if it's just to the point of, yeah, we can do it. It's not going to be commercially feasible for. But as soon as you show you can do it. Although it's, yeah. Anyway. So, and there's all sorts of other stuff, you know, like non-tokamak systems we've been reading about that are kind of cool. Anyway. Mm-hmm. But. So, since that came up, and it had one of the few articles that I had read. So, anyway, but the big one, because this podcast 24, is a podcast about gene, did we say gene drive systems? Is that what we called it? Yeah. Okay.
And CRISPR-Cas9.
I know, and CRISPR-Cas9 again.
So we're driving to work, and Patrick starts talking to me about this gene drive that turns mosquitoes into malaria fighters article.
And before you take it off, actually, maybe some background.
Okay.
What was the summer that you did your Keenan Fellowship?
Not last summer, but the summer before.
So one of the two labs you were in was
Dr. Gould's
lab. Dr. Gould. And it's while
at NC State University in North Carolina.
Okay. So you had me reading a bunch of stuff, and that's when I first read about gene drive systems.
Right.
And since then, we've been kind of interested in this, and it's come up several times as in the news about, and gene drive is basically, if you have some characteristic that you want to have show up in a population, so you genetically engineer, or it wouldn't have to be genetically engineered, you breed an animal to have that characteristic, and then you want to put it in the wild and have it, you know, have that characteristic in the wild, and it starts to breed. Well, your gene's going to be diluted with every generation. And that's simple Mendelian genetics.
Right.
You breed, and your offspring have half of your genes and half of whatever the wild genes are, and then they breed, and those offsprings have one quarter and one-eighth, and blah, blah, blah. And gene drive gets around that.
Right.
A good gene drive makes it that the next generation has more than half every time.
Right.
And, you know, when we understand now the mechanism behind Mendelian genetics, and when you hear that at first, you're like, how is that even possible, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you have meiosis, you have your chromatids being pulled apart, and half from you and half from your mate put get together. So how can it have more than half?
Right.
And it's because the genes that are on your half actually have enzymes that cut them out and insert them into the other side and take out the... So it's like forcing itself onto the mate's genes.
Mm-hmm.
And
whenever you manipulate the genes like that,
yeah,
in an organism, then you form a transgenic,
yeah,
organism. And in this case, we're looking at transgenic mosquitoes.
So that was the background.
Mm-hmm. So
what's this one?
Okay, so this one, they're using Cas9 for their gene drive system.
Mm-hmm.
And they have come up with a gene drive that's 99% efficient.
Mm-hmm.
And which, like you were saying, is kind of mind-blowing if you think back of...
Well, we talked about this drive system, mm-hmm. I mean, not in mosquitoes, but
right.
Wasn't that the guy at UC San Diego? I think we talked about it in an earlier podcast where he was using the fruit flies.
Right.
And there was all this scare about, oh my gosh, what if they get out?
Right.
And
this institute...
They had all these rules
right,
to follow.
Had to use similar protocols for keeping their mosquitoes population separate, and it included having five doors to enter the lab.
Yeah.
And the mosquito that they were rearing in California was not one that was indigenous there or could live there if it was not supported in their lab.
Let me look it up.
So, and I just looked at that. And so,
Anopheles Stephensi. Stephensi.
Yeah.
Stephensi? Stephensi. Anopheles Stephensi.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite one of all these restrictions, it wasn't in this article, but it was, I'm pretty sure, in the one we reviewed a while ago, was... You had one person being trained, and that one person had to do all the experiments, and
yeah,
no one else was allowed in. And you can really see how you get used to doing stuff, and you're mm-hmm. efficient. And every time you train something new, stuff happens,
mm-hmm.
because they do something that this new person didn't expect. And so I thought that was a neat
thing.
Anyway,
I thought that was a neat idea for their protocol.
So this is from two different groups getting
right.
together. The
mm-hmm.
the one we talked about earlier, and the new one doing the mosquito stuff.
Right. So, a very interesting study. And
do you remember what they did with the mosquito? Like, why?
So
what's special about the mosquito that they're trying to do? Because the fruit flies is just
to show
the drive system.
So the mosquito is carrying a virus?
No, it's carrying antibodies.
Antibodies that will infect other malaria carrying mosquitoes. Am I wrong?
I think it'll just stop that mosquito from getting malaria.
Oh, it'll stop that mosquito from getting malaria. And then it will reduce the number of mosquitoes that are malaria carriers.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's transgenic twice, right? Because it's transgenic because it's got CRISPR-Cas9, but it's also transgenic because of the antibodies.
Antibodies, yeah.
Which come from mouse.
Mm-hmm. And then they were thinking that they could do a similar system for Lyme disease.
Yeah, did they start on that already? I think research might or not.
It was mentioned, and then it just caught my eye because we have Lyme disease in our area. And I was like, whoa, that would be really cool. But
yeah.
Anyway.
Did you see for a really super quick test to see which mosquitoes had the gene drive system and which did not, what they did?
The eyes?
The eyes,
the color of the eyes?
They made it cut out the eye color.
Yeah. So I thought that was interesting. So as an easy check to see what ones had been our transgenic mosquitoes compared to their normal wild, they could tell by the eye color.
Oh, by the way, we should say where this is from. Page 1014, and it's the November 27th issue of Science.
Right. And one of the concerns is that, you know, they have this great system, but it may never be used because...
Oh, right, right. Yeah, this is not going to... They're not going to use it.
No.
Because, that's the scare about the gene drive.
Yeah, because of the scare around the gene drive and how it could...
I mean, just because...
Impact the environment.
And if it's that efficient... You could imagine releasing a few mosquitoes, and then a few years later, every single mosquito in the world from that species has that gene.
Mm-hmm.
So, although I can't imagine what the problem would be in knocking out malaria.
I know. That's, I hasn't...
Some people want to just kill the mosquitoes.
Right. So I don't know.
But there's definitely a lot of animals that feed on mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same as knocking out malaria.
Yeah.
But then you could have weird thing happening, right? Because the malaria parasite must be detriment to the mosquitoes also.
Mm-hmm.
What if that makes the mosquito population increase and then you get other diseases transmitted even more?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. That sounds kind of far-fetched.
Yeah, I don't know. And then when I was reading...
We don't know.
Right, we
don't
know.
And once it's out there, because it's a gene drive system, it'll be impossible to stop, possibly.
And
so that's the scare.
Not that this puts it in a positive light, but I also, when I was reading through the article and, you know, it talks about the comments about the concern about the effect on the environment, I think of... Poor Australia. The amount of craziness they've had on that poor island. And so, you know, when I think about it, I'm like, why wouldn't they? And then I'm like, well, think about Australia.
Right.
Think about the damage without knowing.
So many well-meaning efforts have been done that have just turned to just a nightmare.
Right. But I would love to see it tested in a broader way, and I don't know how that could be done.
Well, so one of the things is that, I mean, I don't know if it'll be possible here. The guy, mosquito guy, he's at UC Irvine, I think.
Yeah.
One of his concerns, which was not, they got over it, was that this antibody's big.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't sure that they'd be able to get all that into a single gene drive system, plus the antibody and everything. One of the safeties would require adding more. So the idea is you design the gene drive system so that if there's... It also incorporates something... That Here's a perfect example. I'm making this totally up, so I don't know if this is right. But imagine you put in your gene drive, and it's got your antibody, the gene for the antibody against malaria.
Mm-hmm.
And it has this enzyme that goes out and destroys, it destroyed the color of the eye, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's say the gene drive also, not the gene drive, the CRISPR-Cas9 system, also destroys an enzyme that converts some nutrient in the environment to something you need mm-hmm. that is not available.
Right.
And then you just make sure that stuff is all over the environment where you release your mosquitoes.
Right.
And you test it, right? And it just goes, you spray it on plants. I don't know. They're missing an amino acid and they can suck it up just when they drink. I'm just totally making this up. But, then you release your mosquitoes and you see if it works in this 1,000-hectare area where you go over with a plane and spray it. And at the edge of that, maybe in that area, the gene drive just totally replaces the local mosquitoes. But when you get to the edge and that nutrient is missing, every mosquito there starves to death.
Right.
If it has your gene drive system. So it can't get very far away.
Yeah.
So that's the type of thing.
Yes.
They said, I came up just with this. I remember when they said, incorporate some system for turning it off. I actually don't know how that would work. Because then seems like you still have the same problem. If it's released, yeah, you incorporated some way to turn it off. But you have to find where it went to. And
right.
if you missed it, and then it spread somewhere else, it seems like you're back to just trying to kill mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's not that difficult. Oh, my God.
Yep. I was just checking.
We're 52. We said 1 hour only.
Yep. Okay.
I thought I was being pretty good.
Oh, I thought you were being very good.
Okay.
I was just trying to keep us on a good track. I was trying to keep us to what we said we would do. Okay? I wasn't upset.
So that's it for the gene drive, CRISPR.
Yep. So, interesting article. And
not all of CRISPR.
No. And there'll be more to come.
But do you want me to do the one that I had?
See, I thought I read the article you had, and then...
About the pigs?
Oh, no, I didn't know about the pig article.
Yeah, this was the pig. I didn't think you had that on your list.
No, I didn't, because I didn't know about that one. I didn't find it.
So I'm not going to... It's neat, and it's out there, and I will just describe not the details of what they did, just the general idea. So this was published out of... Let me see. It's also out of the November 27th Science. And it's page 1101. And it's Luhan Yang et al. Let me see. And where are they? Harvard Medical School? Weiss Institute of Biologically Inspired Engineering, Harvard University? College of Animal Science, Zhejiang University, Hangzhou, in China, several other places.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so they took CRISPR-Cas9 and they were looking at pigs. And here's the problem. There's a shortage of organ transplants. I mean, of organs.
Oh, this goes along with my news article.
Does it?
Mm-hmm.
That you're about
I
to cover?
I did last week.
Oh, that you did last week. What was that?
It was about their growing organs in pigs.
Oh, I don't remember. So, here's the problem. Well, that does dovetail right into this. Shortage of organs for organ transplants.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big problem, though. Pigs, like all animals have all these viruses that are incorporated into their genome. This is not necessarily something they acquired. It's part of their genes.
Right.
And it can come out, so proviruses and stuff. And these are retroviruses that are causing a concern in pigs. They call them PERVs, P-E-R-Vs, for porcine endogenous retroviruses.
Right.
They were looking, I didn't look at the full article, so I think this was culture work, but I'm not sure. But basically, they were looking at cell lines.
Right.
And the one they concentrated on was a kidney epithelial cell line.
Mm-hmm.
And it had, like all these cell lines, some of these PERVs inside, and they basically counted how many they could find. They came up with 62 retroviruses stably in these cells. And they basically trained CRISPR-Cas9 to go after the POL genes, the POL gene, P-O-L, and they were able to totally destroy every POL gene each genome. I don't think that means, that's what they say, I don't think it means they get every POL gene in every cell. It means that in most of the cells, there's not one POL gene that still shows up in all the cells.
Right.
Right. And, but still, the rate of transfection to human cells is down 1,000-fold with this.
Isn't that incredible?
So that's pretty cool.
Very exciting for people who are waiting for organs.
Yeah. So, well, I don't know how far away it is. I mean, I don't know. So this is really cool. That they can do that. It's in cell culture.
At NC State, they actually are like raising pigs. I don't know how, you know, it's the goal was for organs. But I don't know how far along the project is. It's pretty new. They've set it up in the last 2 years. So definitely something we'll hear more about. Very interesting.
Anyway, there's a bunch more that's interesting for this article, including I think some a bit scary stuff for what if you actually did this and used it. But it is almost up the hour and we still have a bunch of things to cover.
We do.
What next?
Your work. Your big breakthrough.
Okay. So I will bring this thing up and let me make this big letter so I can see better. No, that doesn't do anything. Control plus. No. Okay, I'll use the small type. Okay. So why is it that basically this week I stopped working on the Island CT website? And stopped reading science?
Because you went on vacation.
Because I went on vacation. No, that is not the case. I was coming home and immediately going to work.
Because it was Thanksgiving and you had lots of time.
Well, this didn't happen until... When did this happen? Yeah, it happened just before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, during...
Yeah, but we didn't have any time during Thanksgiving to do anything.
That's why I joked about it.
Yeah, but right after Thanksgiving. So... The big news is that we've been talking and showing on our website progress being made on getting our 80-meter ARDF transmitter built. That's the prototype for which we'll have boards made at Osh Park. And and it's like hitting, it was hitting one wall after another. And I mean, I was to the point where I was going to go back to making micro foxes.
Right.
And having those, just so we have something. And, you know, part of that is because this is not my area of expertise. I'm learning as I go, and I just couldn't figure it out. Well, just a few days ago, I had an idea of one more thing to try, and I made a brand new module, which is now on the board, kind of sitting in midair, hooked up by wires.
Right.
And I slowly changed the voltage on one of the components, and I started to see the power go up.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went up higher than I'd ever had it, and it kept going up. And we've reached way over 4 watts.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I could easily go over 5 watts if I wanted to. I mean, it went up, and they didn't seem to be slowing down. On the antenna side of the filter, which I didn't have an antenna, I just had a dummy load, we were looking at a nice sine wave. And so we're done. If we built that, now I want to make a few changes.
Mm-hmm.
This is truly a life changer.
It is.
It means that
this is something that you've worked on and built up for years.
Yeah.
And so to have your project coming to a stage where you can see it start to be implemented,
yeah,
it's just fantastic.
I think sometime mid spring semester.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be getting out with kids for true event, not just just go around this small section, like
right.
a full. So, yeah. So
I'm really excited just to get out
too.
With you, and
yeah, for
I think
us to go out and test them out.
I think it'll be a lot of fun, and especially if we get like that much stronger of a signal, it's going to be fabulous for going out. And testing it in.
And so what's special about this is that it's a basic design for the power chain that's been out there and used for many international mm-hmm. events, except it's being controlled now by the SI5351 chip, which people have adapted for use in amateur radio for different projects and stuff, but I've never seen anyone use for ARDF. So there's a really good reason it'd be useful there, and I designed the connection between the two there, and then we use the 80 mega for the controller.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've done a bunch of experiments since then and encountered some other problem and other successes, but I keep, like I was saying, I have this term, it's just all smooth sailing.
Yeah,
every problem just means we can do a few experiments, and sure enough it leads to a decision that's a progress, right? That, this will be better. It's not like just one experiment after another. We just can't get enough power out.
Right.
So,
and, you know, it's just really neat to see you work at different sections of this and build up the project over time. And it has taken a long time because there are a lot of skills that need to be learned. There's a lot of, things where you're like, I see how that works. Oh, yeah, I have pretty much a template for how to go about it.
Yes.
But then when it comes to the application and to setting all those things together, it becomes a much more challenging situation, whether it's like, you fried that particular, what is it?
The chip.
Or it's just the different types of, tools that you need and the specialty of being able to focus in on such small, specialized equipment like the microscope and things like that
to work on a smaller scale. Yeah, the big thing here was that there was really nothing to follow because the SI5351 was putting out a low voltage
mm-hmm.
compared to anything that's out there for RDF. And there's stuff to up voltage out there, but I don't recognize it. I don't know what, in the really complicated stuff that uses SI5351, it's too complicated for me to understand.
Mm-hmm.
I would eventually, but not in just the months we have now. Only working at it when I get back on some evenings, because we have other stuff to do. And the second part, the RDF part, we needed to get it up to 1 to 5 watts. Those mm-hmm. are the regulations. And, you know, we've tried with the Microfoxes. They work okay for very small events, but.
Right.
And getting that part to be powered. I mean, I really basically designed a stage in between
mm-hmm.
To get that to work. So, yeah. Let's see. One of the new questions that came up has to do with the batteries. Looks like we're using 600 milliamps at, mm-hmm. I think it was 14.4 volts.
Right.
Or so. So nickel metal hydrides that we're using, they have a capacity of 2,400 milliamp hours. So that's, I don't know. I think I might try to see if I can't dial back how much power we're putting if we can, or use an external battery pack as I don't know. Well, it's something definitely that it's not a huge problem, but you know, that's something to think about in the future. What else? Oh, we talked a lot about making the Oshpark SI5351 board.
Yeah.
And I finally started to put it together, so can't see it on the podcast, but I'm holding it here up with Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm calling it a lifer. Last night I soldered on the SI5351
mm-hmm.
on there, and it's my very first MSOP
right.
10-pin. This is the smallest thing I've ever done. And we don't know, right? Because
right.
it's not tested yet, so maybe it won't work. But hopefully it will. We'll just have to see.
Mm-hmm. Very exciting, though.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, I used the solder paste. I went back to that.
Mm-hmm.
Used the USB microscope we got that I had used for doing that. You know, I wrote that blog entry.
Mm-hmm.
About transferring a diagram over. So nothing else yet since it hasn't been tested. We'll talk more about 80 meter transmitter as mm-hmm. we work at it. I think I'll skip the plans for that. Anything else?
Should we go on to
future plans?
Future plans.
So I do have two other ones before you move on.
Okay, sure.
VirtualBox you had as future plans. I actually started working at that.
Nice.
Nightmare.
Oh.
That was... Isaac was just here at Thanksgiving. He's like, yeah. I just run this and this and that.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know, you need to have just a bit of experience. Well, maybe it works the first time for people, right? And I have had it.
I thought you used it.
I have okay. Fedora running in a virtual yeah. box on one thing, but I've never used it a lot because I've always tried. It's always been to try distros that I don't, and I like to try distros that are small. So it's to try ones that are a little bit more hungry. And at the time, I had put them on computers that were older. And so it didn't work out too well. But anyway, this has really been a tough one. Anyway, I'm going to keep working at it. And OpenOrienteering, remember?
Mm-hmm.
I was doing it with you. Or
yeah.
just next to you.
Oh,
with
yeah.
you.
Yeah, you and actually put in our upcoming
well,
map.
I was trying to trace
mm-hmm.
the map.
Yeah.
So I found out I think it's called templates, if you bring up. If you click on templates in OpenOrienteering, you can bring out another map and use it underneath and then draw on top to match it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we decided, man, that's going to take a long time. I mean, it's
right.
doable, but if there's some way to automatically transfer this stuff over, it'd be better. If not, it's still doable, but not for this time for our
right.
outing. It would just take too much time.
Right.
So, but we'll work some more with
mm-hmm.
it, see what.
And, yeah. So, I had set it up to download it, and then I didn't get to it over the weekend, but that's okay. I'll get back to it this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's all I had, the virtual box and okay. open orienteering.
So our future plans is we definitely have to get out to Falls Lake. We'll probably be out there this weekend.
This weekend's going to be busy.
Yep. And
Long-O meet. And Falls Lake Recon.
Right. I wanted a long-short meet, but you're going for the 4 hours.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
There's a very short, I don't know what there's. There's a 2 hour and a 4 hours. Actually, yeah. If we do the 2 hour, that's actually shorter than a regular meet. Mm-hmm. I hadn't thought about it that way.
So our orienteering this weekend, it's an interesting one. It's called a Scoro.
Yeah.
And so for Scoros, they just put a bunch of flags out. And your goal is to try to get as many flags as possible and come back in a certain amount of time. And they have 1 hour, 2 hours, and 4 hours. And so you...
I've never done a big one like this.
No.
I've only done like sprint or regular.
Right. I've only done a 1 hour one.
Well, you did the Bubba... Is it the Bubba Goat?
Or the no, the goat? Bubba Goat was different.
Was it?
Yeah, because you had to... You
had to follow
you
a track.
You had to follow a leg.
Gotcha.
And I got totally messed up. But I didn't do the Bubba.
The Bubba
did me. I couldn't get through it. I got lost. But anyway, yep. So,
anyway, so let's move on.
Okay.
I have to write my blog entry.
Yep.
I don't know. Maybe I'll do it on the MSOP.
Oh,
not
yeah.
Not sure yet.
Yeah.
There's other things I could do it on.
Right.
The 80-meter transmitter, finally getting that done.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Much work on Island CT is coming up. Oh, so we have a goal, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be tough to get all of the stuff from the server.
Oh, yeah.
Up onto our new server
mm-hmm.
before the year ends. Which
right.
means really before December 23rd.
Right.
Probably it has to be before that. Because we're going to get busy with other stuff and then we're going to be gone for a while skiing. So it's got to be done. Which, it was going pretty fast last week.
It was.
So I think this is definitely doable. The SSD drive into the laptop.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't worked at that yet. But I've been on the bike, even in the cold weather, so as long as it doesn't freeze, if it's raining and cold, I'm gonna try to keep on the bike.
Yeah.
So there's not that much of a need. The need is not so urgent for the SSD in the laptop.
Right.
Which the idea was so I could take it on the bus,
mm-hmm.
where you have vibrations, but I could still work at it.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm kind of leery of taking a regular hard drive.
Right.
And having it running
mm-hmm.
while the bus is running along. Driving over the brave bicyclists out there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all I had.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Did you have stuff?
Well, next week I need to bring in my electromagnetic kit for the students to use. I need the lighter wire from you so that they can get their electromagnetic
going. Oh, yes,
going.
I totally forgot.
Yeah, I forgot it too. I used the wire we had at school. It was a little too heavy to make it really go
so
through the
some,
rotations.
Is it just one or several kids?
Just one.
Just
who's
one.
Very interested.
An electromagnet.
Yeah, electromagnet, sorry.
No, I was just saying.
Yeah, so...
That'll be fun.
Yeah, so it's exciting. I have two students right now trying to write grants.
And
very
that's
excited.
The same student also that wanted to do solar stuff.
Yeah.
So if I give you a couple of the solar cells, maybe he could actually drive his electromagnet
from the solar
from a solar cell.
Nice. Yeah. That sounds really cool. He's just a very interesting guy, and it gives him something to really focus on, and mm-hmm. I know he's really excited because when he comes by me in the hall, he comes really close and he says hello, and he hasn't been saying hello as much, you know, but now he's like, we're going to build that magnet. And I'm like, definitely. So I have to remember to have my stuff together.
So for Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. For Tuesday. So,
I see you have GPS tablet.
Oh, I haven't set that up, but I'm thinking of trying to play with it a bit this weekend when we're out at Falls Lake. Okay. So that I have it running so I can see if it'll actually track us. Okay. And I figure we're going to be out there so often that
I'll give you a GeoRefs map.
Yep. Okay. So.
And write the grant for the students. Mm-hmm. I mean, with the students for the robot kits. That's the one you've talked about last time.
Yeah, well, they've changed it up. They've changed it up, so they're going to make the drone. And so they want to make it up. And I'm letting them go with what they decide. And now there's a group of three of them working on it. And...
Does it seem reasonable, though?
Like when I looked at it,
how much you're gonna...
I don't know. It's like, it looks like there's the sections that they will be printing might be more reasonable than I initially thought. So okay. I'll just have to wait to see, and we'll figure it out, and we'll problem solve as we go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So...
That's it. Okay, so it is 1 hour and 17 minutes. Well, not as bad as last time. Thank you for listening to the Island CT podcast.
Make sure you check out the blog.
Goodbye.